Welcome to the Construction Industry Podcast. Fresh ideas for today's construction professional. The Construction Industry Podcast is brought to you by Remontech, remote monitoring technologies. Find us on the web at constructionindustrypodcast.com.
And hello, everybody. My name is Cesar Abate, and this is the Construction Industry Podcast, and I'm your host. This is the 29th episode of the show, a show that's dedicated to helping you navigate the waters of the construction industry. Whether you're just starting your career, or you have been in the trenches for years, or even if you're a construction project owner or construction business owner, this is the show for you. Today, I have my friend Duane Craig again on the show. He's the construction informer, and we're going to talk about innovative ideas to deal with construction waste. Stay tuned. Hello once again, and again, I feel like I'm doing this every time, but I'm very sorry for being late again. Luckily, the fact that I'm late with the show means that I've been kind of busy, which is good for business, but it's hard to keep up with the weekly release of the show. For example, I spent a week in Brazil overseeing the installation of a new system down there. Very exciting project there. I see if I can put a link on the show notes for that project. It's a mining operation that's being expanded in Brazil. It's an iron mine and plant that goes with it, right? So it's a beautiful landscape there, and I spent about a week there. And I like these jobs in Brazil because I get an opportunity to visit with friends and family. Because as you may remember, I'm from there. And, and besides that, I've been traveling here and there, more local trips, but it's just been hard to kind of sit down and produce the show, especially if I'm on the road. Yeah, it's difficult. So, I have a few episodes now that are, planned ahead of time. So, I'm hoping that for at least the next 3 or 4 weeks, I'll be able to keep up with a weekly release of the show. I'd like to start today by mentioning again that I really appreciate if you could leave me a rating, a review on iTunes. And what I'm going to start doing, I'm going to start thanking people here on the show and people who have done that. And today I'd like to talk about two reviews that I received there. And number one, let me pull it up here. It's by the family Stolfi. Okay. Stolfi family. Okay. And from the US. And the review says that the show is informative and insightful, and that I do, I'm going to quote here so it doesn't sound like I'm bragging, but it said that Cesar Bate does a wonderful job with this podcast. It's full of wonderful and practical ideas. Thank you so much. It means a lot to me, Stolfi family, that you have not only taken the time to listen to the show, but also to leave a review there. So thank you very much, Stolfi family. If you'd like, send me a note on feedback at Construction Industry Podcast. If you'd like to talk to me, and we can chat that way as well. And the second person I'd like to thank today is Theodore Papadopoulos, and I hope I didn't butcher your name. It looks Greek to me, and I think it is. And Theodore says that this is a gem, and he also says that the show is useful, helpful, and entertaining. And he says, nicely done. So Theodore, thank you again for leaving that review. And as I said before, if you who are listening right now, if you benefit from the Construction Industry Podcast, if you think it's of value to you, please consider helping us by leaving a review or a rating on iTunes. And I'm not asking this because I like to, hear praises or anything. It's because this helps other people find the show. See, the more reviews and ratings you have, the higher you rank on the iTunes catalog. So when people search for construction or architecture or engineering on iTunes, chances are our show is going to be closer to the top of the list than it is right now. It's the reviews that I've received so far have helped. So thank you very much. And if you can keep doing that, I'll try to thank you personally here on the show. On the same vein of thanking people, I'd like to take a moment to and thank some people that have started following me on Twitter. And that's another way to connect with me and connect with what we're doing here, both at Remon Tech and with the Construction Industry Podcast. And the three people I'd like to thank today for following me on Twitter is a gentleman called Mike Bazinet, and he has a very interesting profile there. He's an advocate for infrastructure reform in the US, which is very interesting. So thank you, Mike, for following me there. And also I'd like to thank CC Myers. That's an employee-owned civil engineering firm that specializes in bridges and highway construction. Very neat website. I visited it. So thank you, CC Myers, for the follow. And thirdly, I'd like to thank Amanda Walters. And Amanda Walters wrote a book called Social Media in Action, specifically for, as she says it, landscape and architecture planners and designers to help them communicate. And I'm really planning on reading her book. And when I do, I will share my thoughts here with you. And Amanda was recommended to me by Mark Johnson, who was on the show just a couple of episodes ago, talking about SlideShare. So thank you, Amanda, for the follow. And to connect with me on Twitter, you can go to CIPOnTwitter.com, and CIP stands for Construction Industry Podcast. If you go to CIPOnTwitter.com, it'll get redirected to my Twitter profile. And if you connect with me there, I'll try to mention you and your business here on the show. The next thing I'd like to talk about today is something that I'm still like picking my jaw up from the floor. Something that happened to me that's really, really amazing, and I feel really humbled. There is a show that happens twice a year. It's called New Media Expo, okay, and it used to be called Blog World, and it's basically a conference / trade show kind of thing for the blogging world, for bloggers and podcasters, and web TV now is also included. So this is the go-to show for you to learn the latest trends and products and services geared towards bloggers and podcasters and web TV content creators. And so it's a 3-day event. There's over 150 speakers that are selected to speak there. And so you can attend. And there's a show in New York City in the winter, I believe. And then there's another one, spring, summerish, around timeline. And then there's another one in Las Vegas in the winter. And to be able to attend one of these events, if you have a blog or a podcast, it's amazing. It's an amazing thing, an amazing opportunity. And not only will I be attending the next one in Las Vegas in January, but I've been selected to be one of the speakers on the next show, which to me is really amazing. Just last week, I received an email from New Media Expo and saying that I had been accepted as a speaker during the next conference. And I'm still blown away by that. And I'm going to add a link to New Media Expo on the show notes for this episode. I just wanted to let you know, my talk is going to be about the benefits of being the first one to podcast within your niche. I understand I'm not the first, podcast in the construction sector, but I believe the approach that I take and the target audience for this show, I believe I'm the first one to approach it that way. And the thing is, a lot of people who have blogs or who are considering podcasting, they may feel like they shouldn't, because they go on iTunes and they search for other podcasts within their niche, and they can't find any. So they think, well, there might not be an audience for this. And my talk is to encourage them to pursue it anyways. And I'm sure you can appreciate the fact, if you enjoyed this show, you can appreciate the fact that it is a benefit. You know, when somebody like me who comes into a niche where there's very little podcasting being done, when somebody like me comes in and it starts one. So I will share with the audience my tips and my experience and how to successfully promote your podcast in a niche when people usually don't know what that is. So check out the link. I'm going to add that to the website. And you can go to remontech.com/029 for the show notes for this episode. And here's another thing that really humbled me. I was nominated for a B2 award, okay, as the best AEC social media blog. Yeah, that, you know, extends architecture, engineering, and construction. And this is an online award that is given by this organization in the UK. And it's really cool that I've been nominated. There's three other nominees, I believe. So it'd be really cool if we got some votes there. So if you'd like to vote for me or for the Construction Industry Podcast to receive the B2 award as the AEC social media best social media blog, you can visit remontech.com/2012award. Okay, so remontech, that's remontech.com/2012award. So 2012 award. And you can, it's pretty obvious how to vote there. Just select whoever you want to vote for and click vote. All right. Now I think I'm ready for today's show. Dwayne Craig. Dwayne Craig is a widely published writer in print and online. He also writes promotional copy and press releases for businesses and public relations firms. His articles on agriculture, construction, finance, food, business, exporting, and technology have been published in the Washington Post, Byte Magazine, TechTarget, American Food and Ag Exporter, Daily Business, and many other venues. His blogs include Construction Informer and Construction Cloud Computing. Dwayne spoke with me from his office in Texas. Enjoy the interview.
And now, our feature segment.
Good morning, Dwayne. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today, Caesar?
I'm doing good. It's 9 o'clock here, and it's finally starting to cool down up here in Canada. People don't usually realize that it gets pretty hot here in the summer. So how are things?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're having the same thing down here in Texas. I mean, we're actually going to be in the low 90s for the next few days. So it'll be time to break out some sweaters, at least, I guess.
I know. My wife is, she's not from Texas, but she lived there a long time. She went through high school and college there. And I've been there a few times. And one of the times was, I think it was August. And I remember looking out the window of the car and said, why isn't everybody outside? I mean, it's so nice, you know, it's a beautiful day. Until I tried and I said, oh my goodness, like how, yeah. And I'm from Brazil, huh? That's saying something.
Yeah, well, you know, you have down there, you have pretty temperate climate, don't you?
Yeah, it's more stable, I guess. Let's put it that way. It's spring-like all year, pretty much, depending on where you are. But for the most part, it's people don't really think much about the weather there, like we do here. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't think we have a weather channel down there. It doesn't make any sense.
But.
Speaking of third world countries, let's talk about this email you sent me a while back. You know, I asked you because you have, you know, you're at the head of the Construction Informer website, which is a great resource, by the way, for anybody interested in what's going on in the world of construction. So I asked you, I think it was a couple months ago, if you'd like to come on the podcast every once in a while to talk about something that's in the news or some topic that you think is interesting or some trend And you sent me an email about construction waste and some interesting things that are being done to it in places like Haiti and Palestine. So can you tell us a little bit about what's on your mind about construction waste?
Well, you know, the construction industry is a really robust generator of waste. And a lot of that waste, or a good portion of it, it just ends up going into landfills. And for one example is, you know, a 2,000 square foot home generates about 8,000 pounds of waste, or about, you know, it's around 10 to 15% of all the materials used. So, you know, one estimate I saw in 2009 was that all the U.S. construction waste equaled about 136 million tons a year. And that's not an easy number to get your mind around. So I did some calculations using some figuring out what some of these materials would cube out to. And it comes out to about enough material to fill 2,000 football fields to a height of 400 feet.
Yikes.
So, you know, this is something that you know, there's a lot of land in the United States, and I remember reading sometime in the last year that there was about 10% that was actually built on, and the rest was open for, well, I guess we could consider it open for landfills and other things, but
yeah.
But what happens with this waste once it goes into the landfills and how it affects, for example, water quality and other environmental, the quality of our environment in general, that becomes an even longer-term issue. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's something that, you know, construction really needs to focus on and see what it can do about, you know, reducing, reusing, and recycling.
Mm-hmm. So is it fair to say that most of these 2,000 football fields worth of waste goes into landfill today?
Yeah, every year in the U.S.
Wow. Okay.
Just from construction, you know, the global, you know, there's the whole larger issue about human waste in general on a global scale. I mean, it's Pike Research recently estimated that it's going to equal 3 billion tons a year by 2022. So extensive waste that the human race generates is becoming a problem for a lot of places that don't have the kind of land, for example, the United States has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, even here in Canada, that we have even more land than the U.S. and a tenth of the people, right, population. Mm-hmm. Places like Toronto, usually the major, the big cities, they don't know what to do with it, you know, and nobody wants their garbage, you know. Like, I think for a while, I don't know that we still do it. I think we still do it. Toronto ships a lot of the garbage to the U.S. actually, to Michigan,
<Yeah.
laughs> to Michigan, because nobody here wants it. And anyway, but
And the U.S. turns around and ships it out, you know, to third world countries. So.
Yeah. I think we should get like a huge slingshot and slingshot this stuff into space or something.
I don't know if you remember. You remember? I don't know. I think it was about 20 years ago. The garbage barge that left New York City looking for a home, and I think eventually it came back and it ended up in that big waste landfill they have there around New York City. It's like an island, Fishkill Island, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it was out in sea looking for some place to dump for, I don't know, it was months. It was a weird thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a problem that's always been around. It just gets worse as the population grows, and we tend to live on top of each other in big cities. And I know you kind of broke away from that, but but it's still a trend. And and with construction too, you know, like when people live close together, you need more concrete because you need to pile things on top of each other, and then when it's time to demolish, and then we don't know what to do with it. But on your research there, you found some interesting uses for concrete, right?
Well, you know, I picked up a news item about some researchers from Georgia Tech, and they went down to Haiti after the earthquakes there. I think to get an idea about construction, the kind of reconstruction that was going to go on and what materials were going to be used and things like that. And what they discovered was that there was about 20 million, they estimated 20 million cubic yards of concrete rubble that, you know, Haiti needed to get rid of, but there was no place to put it. Mm-hmm. And what they noticed was that the people were actually reusing it to make new concrete, but they weren't really batching it right. I mean, they were kind of going by how it looked. So when they checked out a block made down there, they found them to be only about 1,300 PSI. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, most builders, we all talk about concrete strengths in the 3,000 and up PSI range. So that's you know, another potential catastrophe waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. So if 3SI is generally the preferred minimum strength, at least in the U.S., so the researchers, they used that Haitian rubble in some what they termed indigenous sand. And I guess they mean sand that came directly from Haiti.
Yeah.
And they made some concrete out of it that did hit the 3,000 PSI mark. And all they had to do really was just pay close attention to the mixture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's just when it comes to batching it, you know, and the idea of reusing rubble is pretty, it plays into that whole idea of not just discarding things, but finding new ways to use them.
Right. And I read that article, and they mix all the concrete by hand down there. And as you said, you know, they go by what it looks. And I can relate to that because I grew up in Brazil, as you know, and even us, like my dad and I, we built our own home there. And you know, it was like the land was in a slope. We needed to build like a foundation. It would be like a backsplit type of thing because, you know, the land kind of sloped down as you went into the lot. And we mixed a lot of that concrete for that foundation by hand. And a lot of people do it down there, especially if they can't afford it, they water it down, they use more sand than cement, or you know, or so yeah. I can only imagine in Haiti, you know, the aftermath of that of the disaster, you know, people trying to cut corners and do things by hand and just, you know, make enough concrete that's strong enough just so it would stay up, you know.
Right. Yeah. No, it's kind of scary, really, if they start going much higher than, you know, 6 feet or so, I think.
But. Yeah. And the article seems to suggest that even the concrete that was used before the earthquake was subpar and probably responsible for the amount of damage that you know, followed the earthquake. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, well, that's pretty cool. So do you know if they are actually, this was an academic type of work, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, Georgia Tech has a pretty active construction research kind of effort going on down there. So I think I think, you know, that was part of their initiatives to help come up with some answers, you know, for mm-hmm. that catastrophe down there.
Yeah. Cool. Let's hope that some of this can be used down there, because from what I read, there is still a lot of debris, and it's been, what, 2 years now, almost? Year and a half?
Since I think so, yeah. I think it has. I mean, but this is something that goes on across the globe. I mean, when you look at, just think about the Arab Spring and all the devastation that's gone on over there and continues to go on. I mean, in the wake of the Arab Spring, for example, the piles and piles of rubble that are just laying around that could be reused. As a matter of fact, the Palestinians started doing this to rebuild after the Israeli attack on Gaza, and they actually invented a small crusher that will reduce the rubble into manageable pieces, and then they can reuse it fairly quickly right on site. So you eliminate the embodied energy investment in the materials by not having to transport them very far either. So that's a big aspect of what happens in construction. Is all of the embodied energy that goes into the materials before they even get to the job. So this idea of just having a mini crusher there, and I looked, I did a quick search, and there are some commercial models of them. They can handle, you can put them in the mini situations where you have brick or concrete waste, and they crumble it up right on the job site so you can reuse that material. And one model I looked at will fit through a standard doorway, mm-hmm. and it has a hopper that's only 16 inches by 16 inches, and it puts out 3/4 to 2 3/4 inch crushed material.
That's pretty cool. And I think a parallel is that it's already been done extensively. It's for highway repaving, right? So when they scrape or break the concrete it's usually for asphalt pavings, but they scrape it and they remix into new asphalt right there on the spot and relay right behind it, right? They have those big machines.
Right.
I don't know what they're called.
Right.
So basically it's the same kind of principle, but mm-hmm. for concrete and for residential projects.
Right.
Interesting. Well, I will add the links to these articles, the one on the Haiti problem solution, I guess, and the Palestinian ingenuity there on the show notes for this episode. And Duane, on the email you sent me, you also mentioned how, I think you mentioned a TV show. I think that was the Extreme Makeover Home Edition, right? In which they come and they demolish the house, and it's a big party, and
yeah.
everybody's cheering.
Right,
and,
right.
But they never show what they do with the stuff, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, most of the time it looks like it just goes to the landfill. Yeah. There's always a certain amount of bravado and glee that goes into smashing the old house. But when you think about those materials and, again, the embodied energy that's in those materials already, it seems there would be wiser uses for it and a wiser way to handle that. I mean, maybe the kitchen cabinets aren't something that anybody's going to put into their home these days because they're outdated. Mm-hmm. But, they might work in somebody's workshop. They might, there's probably many kinds of places where they would serve a purpose again without, just ending up as landfill material. Windows and doors are another good example. People can reuse those for other uses, whether they be in outbuildings and storage sheds or in greenhouses, as in the case of windows. So there's a lot that construction can do to start looking ahead to see how they can reuse materials, particularly when you're coming into a renovation situation. I had a apartment complex I managed the renovation on once, and this was a number of years ago, and the first thing I did is I went out looking for places to get rid of, 100 used toilets and 200 or 300 used sinks. But at that time, there wasn't much available. There weren't many opportunities. No kind of staging process where you could get those materials out into somebody else's hands, who could then find somebody who could use them. But there's more of those coming online nowadays. So I think it's actually coming into its own. Well, it's coming into a time when that's going to be a lot more possible than it has been in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the dollar signs as well, right? If there is a way to make recycling, let's say used toilets, cheaper than buying a new one, then automatically people find ways to to make that happen, you know. And having grown up in South America, people do reuse a lot of things there, not because they're necessarily environmentally conscious, but because it's a lot cheaper than buying new, right? So they get creative on how to reuse windows and doors. So whenever there's a demolition, you know that they're going to be taking care to not destroy, doors, windows, cabinets, because they can either reuse it or sell it, or there's always a new use for that kind of material. So I don't know. I think it's a combination of things being cheaper here and buying new being cheaper, and people having more money, I guess. It's they usually you wouldn't bother, you know, to try to recycle, because yeah, it's easier and faster and cheaper to just go and buy new.
Right, and that has been kind of the mantra for a long time. If you look at there is a website that shows where cost lines up with how doable it becomes. It's called Construction Waste Recycling.
Okay.
And they show it as the technology is satisfactory, but in limited conditions. They show the suppliers are also satisfactory, but again in limited conditions. But they show the cost as being satisfactory in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's on the commercial status. And then on the implementation status, the financing, the acceptance, and the regulatory portions are all satisfactory. So mm-hmm. Once again, we're close, I mean, if there's four of the six criteria that are already being met for a lot more active kinds of reducing, reusing, and recycling on the construction site, then we're getting pretty close. When we just got to get the suppliers and the technology to be more widespread.
Mm-hmm. Do you think cost of labor also plays a role? Because this is what I see, right? Having been pretty much half of my life here, half of my life there, is that labor being so cheap in other places, it makes sense to have, you know, five guys work on making sure this toilet's not broken when you remove it from the site, you know. While here, I think one of the reasons why recycled materials are more expensive is because it takes work to make sure that it's preserved and it's, packaged properly and removed. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that that's probably something that can be taken out in the planning stages, because it is possible to take someone who, say, a contractor is billing out at $40 an hour and make them very highly efficient and careful just through the right kind of training and of course, assuming they have the right attitude to start, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where it comes in, where you work through those cost issues is early on and in the planning stages. That's the real critical aspect of it.
Very good. So, Dwayne, I'm gonna add a link to the Construction Waste Recycling website you mentioned as well. So, this was really interesting. And if people want to learn more about you and your work, where should they go?
Construction Informer. That's just put that in on a search, and you'll find it'll pop up. There's a sister site called Construction Cloud Computing, where people can get information about ways that cloud computing is having an impact on construction and some tips on how to things to look at and consider when you're considering moving stuff to the cloud. So, and the other thing is I'll do a post, because I mean this your post is largely audio, so I'll do a post that'll have text portions of this available with links as well. So they can stop over and and read if they want, or click on links from there as well.
Okay. And once it's posted, you can let me know and I can add that to my show notes as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Dwayne, thank you so much and for stopping by. And whenever you you want to come back and you have something on your mind, just let me know and we'll have you on again.
Okay. Sounds good. And thank you, Caesar.
Thanks.
So that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, you can leave us a rating or a review on iTunes so other people may also find the show. You can also view the show notes for this episode by visiting constructionindustrypodcast.com. I'm Cesar Bade, your construction camera specialist and a project manager for Remontech, where we have been installing cameras for monitoring construction projects since 2002. Please visit us on the web at myconstructioncamera.com. Have a great week.